This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Kerry, and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. And then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Hi, my name's Neil. I'm alcoholic. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with the obsession of the mind. The allergy is a physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. Would our guests like to introduce themselves and give us a quick sketch of who you are?
Hi everyone, yeah, my name's Neil. I'm an alcoholic and I'm aged 44 currently. Mm-hmm. I've been sober for... it'll be 3 years on the 21st of July.
Awesome.
And my occupation is currently working on the roads as a truck driver and machine operator. Mm-hmm. I'm married with 4 children. I've been married about 12 years. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Christchurch. I was originally born in Dunedin, but we moved up when I was young. And... I lived in Melbourne for about 12 years and got back just before Christmas, so it's nice to be back.
Yes.
And, you know, I'd describe my growing up in Christchurch as just an average, you know, Kiwi upbringing, really. There was nothing disturbing or nothing extraordinary that happened. It was just, you know, growing up in the suburbs, going to a public high school and... really, aside from the alcoholism, there's not a lot to mention. So
just your normal Kiwi childhood.
Yes.
Yes,
yes, it was.
Out on the streets playing in summer nights and
hanging out
with friends and,
yeah, spent most of my time out with my mates just playing cricket or playing footy. It was a very sporting sort of an upbringing, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, as I got into my teenage years, it did become a lot of rugby racing and beer, mm-hmm. And with the accent on beer, I guess.
Is that when you started drinking?
Teenage, you know, early teens. The usual story, bunch of guys with a few older brothers in the equation, and the older brothers were sort of like, oh, you guys should have a go at this, and... next thing I know, I've got a pocket full of $1 and $2 notes, as it was in those days, and being pushed into the bottle store. It's like, yeah, go on, Neil, get in there. You look old enough. And the guy fell for it. So, yes. Yeah.
So how did it progress?
Well, it progressed for me. The allergy was always there. I could never guarantee how much I was going to drink. And once I started to drink... I never seemed to have a lot of control over it. But having said that, the mysterious part was that there were nights where I would go out, manage half a dozen drinks, and go home like the rest of my mates on a weeknight.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, Saturday was always, we all got written off. I wasn't unusual in that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the weeknights when we said we were just going to go out and have a couple of jugs and a game of pool, I would be there till the place closed. Mm-hmm. The rest of them would always manage to go home and probably turn up for work the next day, but I couldn't. And it took me a long time to sort of put two and two together on that one. And as far as the progression of the drinking goes, it was really into my 30s when I guess the only thing I could describe it as was it was like a switch went on. The hangovers got absolutely debilitating, and I'd been one of those guys who bounced back the next day.
Yep.
I always said if I got hungover like my mates, I wouldn't drink. Some of them got the most fearsome hangovers, and they'd be back on it the next weekend, and I always looked at them and thought, jeez, if I suffered like that, I wouldn't drink. And when it started, I had... gathered one piece of knowledge throughout that, and that is that a drink the next morning fixes a hangover very fast.
Okay.
And that was once I started to drink in the morning, which I swore I'd never do. But, you know, alcoholism is a slow progression of lowering the bar on yourself. Yeah. Once I started to drink in the morning, it went down pretty rapidly from there.
So do you know why you drank?
Oh, it was, yeah, it was an instant feeling of just life was better. Mm-hmm. If you said to me, would you rather spend a Saturday night out at the Speedway or so wherever you're going to see a band and stay sober, or would you rather drink? I'd be like, what planet are you from? Of course I would rather drink. Life was better with a drink in me. And I didn't know that everybody else didn't necessarily feel like that about alcohol.
Yes.
I just thought everybody must feel like this, but I'm just a bit more gung-ho. I don't know. You rationalize things as you go along, but it was confidence in a bottle. You could talk to girls. You could get up at the disco and bust a few moves. It was all those sorts of things. And like I was saying, when it progressed, it started to become... I mean, there's a part in the book where it talks about crossing the invisible line.
Yep.
And I think I crossed that line at around the same stage that I stopped bragging about how much I could drink and how big a night I'd had and all that, and started hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of shooting into the, you know.
So how did you drink? Were you a social drinker or a binge drinker, or you drink alone?
Predominantly binge drinker. Like I said, when the allergy kicked, it was on. So I always had a big binge. Later on in my drinking career, I discovered other substances that would allow you to drink for an entire weekend without passing out at 10 p.m.
Yes.
And, you know, that's pretty common these days.
Yeah.
But so the benders would go on for 2 or 3 days, and then I'd try not to drink during the week, and then I'd inevitably find myself... it's a bit like what you were talking about at the start, Kerry, with the progression. You know you don't want to drink during the week, but there's a little part of you that goes, this time's going to be different. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to the pub on a Wednesday night. I'm going to have 6 beers. I'm going to have a game of pool with my mates, and I'm going to go home like they do. And it doesn't happen. But that's one of the baffling things about alcoholism, is that you always think it's going to be different the next time. I'll get away with it this time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did you ever become a daily drinker?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Okay. So did you ever feel it was a problem? Did you ever try to stop?
Yeah, I guess deep down I knew it was a problem fairly early on. Not necessarily the drinking, it was my behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could either drink or I could behave myself. It was never both at the same time. So when I woke up to tales of what I'd done the night before, that's when I started to think, oh, I've got to find a way to stop drinking so much, because once I go into blackout, half of the stuff I was getting told I didn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And other people would just say, God, you're a nutcase when you get to that point. And so basically I knew that the behavior was a problem. I just didn't want to associate it with I associated it with how much I drank. But once the obsession got to the point where I was drinking in the morning, that's when I knew I had a problem. But again, you were talking about the denial of it.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a disease of denial. It really does try and, you know, wants to keep you drinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What made you realize you needed help? What was your rock bottom like?
There was a couple. The first time I went to AA, I was in my mid-30s, and... I was talking about being able to behave on the drink. I was a chronic drink driver. I'd smashed up another car. By this time I was, you know, married with children.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't funny anymore. You know, when you're 20 something or in your late teens.
Off.
Yeah, late teens or early 20s, and you smash up a car drinking, most people have done it. But they do it once and they learn and they don't do it again. Yeah. I'd smashed up my fourth car. The wife was set to leave. You know, I was hanging on to a job by the skin of my teeth, and I just went, oh, I need some help with this.
Did you ever have trouble with the law? Did you ever get caught?
Yeah. Yes, I've appeared in a few different courts in different countries. Yeah.
Did you ever get into fights?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot. Yeah. Normally with the bouncers when they were trying to throw me out.
Okay. So how did you feel? What was the decline in your mental and emotional and spiritual well-being like?
Bill writes in the big book that is, you know, all those things fell off as if off a cliff face. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was like for me. There was a tipping point where it went downhill rapidly. I became suicidal. And I started to think that this was what it was going to be like forever, because I tried so often to do something about my drinking, and it's the only thing I'd ever tried so hard to fix, and it had gotten worse.
Yep.
So I started to think, well, maybe there's just no fixing this, and maybe the only way out is to, you know, take a jump off a bridge or something. So there was that. There's fairly classic alcoholism stuff. You know, you start to look for other things outside of alcohol that mm-hmm. are not necessarily conducive to a good marriage. So,
yep, that could explain it.
Yeah.
So how did you find your way to your first AA meeting, and what was that like?
The very first one, yeah, I cracked up another car and went along, and I was... I don't think I was nervous. I was very desperate for some sort of help. And there was some pretty friendly people that gave me some, you know, they really took me in and gave me some advice and said, you know, you should come back every week and that sort of thing. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And I guess my first introduction to AA was some friendly people, well-intentioned, but not really carrying the message of AA. That was to come later on when I sort of had a relapse and a second go at AA.
Did you feel welcomed?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Yeah, very much so. They were, and it was one of the biggest things was that it was nice to know I wasn't the only person with this.
Sure.
Because I didn't work with anybody who was like, I was with drinking, because most of my friends had sort of pulled up at some stage with their drinking. Mm-hmm. I started to feel like a real lone wolf. But when I got to AA, there was a huge sense of relief that, oh, I'm not the only one.
So you're feeling starting to isolate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The drinking had stopped being fun about 7 years before I actually did something about mm-hmm. it. But mm-hmm. It was... Yeah, it was a huge relief to find other people like myself.
So how have you managed to stay sober? What's the process of recovery been like for you?
Well, I was saying earlier, I had a go at AA, and the advice I was getting at that first group was to, you know, get to plenty of meetings. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and it was all good for about 6 months, and eventually the wheels came off and I started to run really rough, although I probably didn't know how rough I was running. It was more the people around me. But the second time I went to AA, I walked into what's commonly known as a group of big book thumpers, and they took me under their wing and took me through the steps. Awesome. And it was chalk and cheese. Yeah.
Wow. How important has service been as a part of your recovery?
Yeah, it's been an important part. Being married with four kids doesn't mean I'm a legend of the service field in AA. I often look at other people doing a lot more than me. But I do what I can when I can. Yes. And so, you know, I've sponsored some people. That's probably been the biggest extent of service that I can offer, because it's a one-on-one thing, and it's yes. personal, and it's also, you know, it can be done over the phone. It's hard to mm-hmm. be cooking a barbecue at an AA get-together over the phone, but, you know, I can sponsor somebody on the phone and seeing them once a week at a meeting. So that's really been, and that was a huge growth area for me.
Of course, and yeah. and it's a very important service, I think.
Yes.
People. Yep. Absolutely, passing down yeah. the message and how to do it.
Yeah, well, that's how AA yeah. grew, really, was word yes. of mouth. People... taking each other on and sponsoring them, and yeah.
How would you describe yourself and the life you have today? How do you feel within yourself sober?
I guess in hindsight, I now know what the people without alcoholism feel like. Mm. I know what it's like to be able to get through things without needing to drink myself to sleep, and to feel normal as far as being in a group situation. There was always that weird feeling prior to recovery of not fitting in,
yes,
and not being a part of. And I know I've got mates, but I don't think they really like me. Just a weird feeling like that, and ultra sensitivity to what everybody thought about you. And that was part of the reason I drank, was that drinking got rid of all those feelings.
Yes.
But having taken the 12 steps now, that's done for me what alcohol used to do. So now when I'm in a group situation, I don't have all those nagging doubts in the back of my head that alcohol used to get rid of. I just feel, yeah, normal for the first time in my life.
So you feel part of?
Yeah, part of. And yep. I don't care anymore what everybody thinks and that they're judging me and watching my every move. And
no more paranoia?
No, none of that. Yeah.
Do you have any hobbies? Do you travel or do anything like that?
Main hobbies would be golf, which I get out and play with my son as time allows. But again, being married with four kids, it's hard to maintain too many hobbies, yeah.
So how are your relationships with your friends and family? How's that changed in sobriety?
Oh, look, I'm probably just a lot easier to live with. Mm-hmm. although you'd really have to ask my wife for for her opinion. But
yes.
Yeah, look, it's, you know, we used to be in the house and it would be like a snake and a mongoose in the same room, you know, just not good. And these days it's more like, a cat and a dog that live together and get on.
It's kind of normal family.
Yeah.
Has to be like that.
Yeah.
So what are your goals for the future?
I'd like to be able to, keep on with AA. It's pretty important to give back to something that's saved my life. And aside from that, as far as the family goes, just making sure my kids have a as normal as can be upbringing, be there for them, look after them, love them and guide them. I've seen a lot of alcoholic parents who's inevitably there's one or two children. It does come down family lines, so that might be there for me in the future. And the best thing I can do is to stay sober so that I can, be there for them and show them what I did to recover from mine.
Yeah, it's a great goal. What would you suggest for any listeners that think they may have a drinking problem? What advice do you wish someone had given to you when drinking became a problem?
Oh, yeah, just do something about it sooner rather than later. It can turn on you very quickly. And that's one of the problems that alcoholics have, is they tend to compare themselves to the guys that go all the way. And sometimes until you're on a park bench with a bottle of sherry in your hand, you don't think you're an alcoholic. But normally the people around you can see what's going on much clearer than we can. Yep. So if you've got three or four people in your life who are giving you a nudge and going, hey, your drinking's not quite normal here, pal.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them.
Good advice. So AA is described as a spiritual program. What does spirituality mean to you?
it's really, what Bill and Ted said in their bogus journey, be good to each other. That's spirituality in a nutshell. I thought when I first got around AA with all the God stuff, where I was going to turn into Ned Flanders off The Simpsons and be running around going, hey diddly, and bothering everybody about Jesus, but it's not like that. Do I believe in God? Yes. But do I pray to God? Yes. But it's a personal thing, and it's the spiritual principles that are common to Christianity are the same ones in most other religions. And really, AA sort of removes the religion from it and says, let's just follow these great set of principles that'll give you a good life. And this has been proven over the centuries.
Yep. Yeah, good answer. Neil, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thank you. very much, Kerry. That's been a pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me on.
Yes, been great listening to you. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with a serenity prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. So we're all going to do it together. God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one.